You wanted a chance to make law. Well, here it is. Make it a good one.
Is this your gun?
No.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
We have your name on the registration.
No, you don't.
Don't be ridiculous. Networks don't get to decide elections. Courts do.
Your Honors, I'm not some slick big city lawyer like my opponent here.
What just happened? You kind of confessed. Sorry.
And I find you guilty. Bring out the wheel of punishment!
Welcome to Opening Arguments, a podcast that pairs a comedian with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 475. What a number. What a number. Speaking of, we got new intro quotes coming at you next episode. Andrew already posted the Patreon thread where you can suggest them and you can vote on your favorites. That helps me. It helps me see who's interested in what. So make sure to do that. But all that aside, Andrew, how are you doing today?
I am fantastic, Thomas. How are you?
Doing great. What a number. 475. We're closing in on 500. I mean, I guess it's a few months away.
What are we going to do for our 500th episode?
It's probably a deep dive on something law, you know, carburetor law. I don't know. It'll be some
carburetor law.
First thing that came to my mind, I'll be like, well, Andrew will be like, there's a regulation on how much carbonation. I don't know what carburetors do. Do they carbonate your car?
I know very little about
it's carbohydrates, carbon. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I drive a Tesla. I don't know.
The proper balance of carbohydrates and carbonation order to run. And that's what the carburetor does. That makes total sense. That makes total sense to me. I have talked myself into hiring you.
Well, anyway, carburetor law deep dive coming at you episode 500. But for now, we've got so much to talk about. As always, you got friggin' Dershowitz, Clownhorn, and Clownhorn, Dershowitz's new Clownhorn and thing, and as promised, no takesies backsies law, a deep dive.
No takesies backsies law.
And this is not your typical no takesies backsies. This is a $900 million no takesies backsies law. I can't wait for this deep dive. So let's see, anything to talk about before we get to that?
Oh, we should say, if you have not yet received the Law and Awful Movies number 42, Cop Rock with Eli Bosnick, I don't know what's wrong with you. It's hysterical. It's cop. It's rock. It's law. It's we may do nothing but Cop Rock for the rest of our natural lives. We actually talked about that off
for at least a year anyway. I was gonna say they only made a few episodes, 10 or 12. But you're saying we could repeat
tapestry.
It. Yeah. Yeah, we could, like, once we finish this season, that might, you know, instead, it's better than Lot Awful Rudy's, I'll tell you that. I would rather do Lot Awful Cop Rock for the rest of my career than have to do another Rudy Giuliani thing. I'm tired of that Muppet.
Well, and speaking of, that's a great transition to our first segment, something else we are definitely not going to do on Lot Awful Movies.
All right, let's get to it.
You betray the law!
So Dershowitz has a new podcast. It's something like cancel culture. So, I mean, it's so predictable. It's such a boring.
Before cancel culture cancels you. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. Is that the name of it, or was that just episode one? I'm not sure.
That was
which.
Just episode one of what he unironically has named the Dersh Show.
Yeah.
The strange fall, decline, and postmortem shamblings of somebody who I've said on here multiple times, you know, was a mentor to me in law school. And our episode, it's episode 198. That was super painful for me to do. So I'm going to link that in the show notes. If you came on in the, you know, 200 or 300s, like a bunch of our listeners have done, go back and listen to that one. It was tough on me, for somebody that, I looked up to for a very, very long time. Anyway, now he has the Der Show over on a platform called Rumble. I want to point out, it is Rumble. Not even, not just Alan Dershowitz's podcast, but the Rumble platform is not the first hit you get when you type Rumble podcast into Google. It actually brings you Michael Moore's like Rumble in the Jungle podcast or whatever it is.
Smart branding. Good job there.
When you find this Rumble platform, it is the strangest thing. I have taken this characterization. All credit goes to Ace Associate Morgan Stringer, who texted me, quote, "This site is 50% public domain puppy videos and 50% the KKK happy fun time smile hour."
Oh my gosh.
And it is dead on, exactly correct as a description. It is like Dan Bongino has his like horrible podcast.
I would love to see the graveyard of right wing grifting on this thing. I mean, there are right wing dating apps that I've come across that are now defunct that, you know, but took an ad on Fox News. I mean, there's so many little things where like, hey, you know how all of society hates you for your totally normal, justified beliefs? Let's create a segregated component of society where it's only Nazis and you guys can feel great together. And I don't think they usually do that well. I'm glad like there's not quite enough Nazis, I guess, to support like Nazi dating. I don't think.
We do not yet have a critical mass of Nazis.
Yeah. So anyway, I think this is another one of those things, right? Rumble. I'm sure that'll be the next Stitcher or something.
Yeah. Once they've managed to grift out all the money they can, I'm sure it will be as defunct as, CPACdate.com or whatever the hell.
Well, what's
that
funny, I know I'm probably derailing you, but what's really funny about this is it follows a very familiar pattern. Like I've read a few articles about this where they always want to go in as we're the real free speech thing. And then what happens is they realize you just unmitigated free speech is not sustainable. Like they realize like, oh, wait, child porn. Yeah, sorry, forgot. We can't do that. Sorry. We're the real free speech site, except obviously no child porn. And then like other lines will be drawn and then you'll get a bunch of people, you know, these conservatives reacting badly to there being any lines drawn. And then it implodes like almost every like clockwork. Like there's several of them that have gone through that same life cycle of like unmitigated free speech. And then you very quickly realize that's not a good idea and you can't do it. And then they implode.
Have you had a chance yet to read the A Libertarian Walks Into a Bear?
Dude, I thought I shared you that. I was the first one who read it and shared it out, and then everybody started saying...
Okay, sorry. Good. I thought so. Yeah, no. So, the last section of that was basically talking about the confluence of all of these libertarian, you know, small government, no government types, like getting together and being like, all right, can we have $12 to like replace? Nope. Voted down. Right?
Sorry, raw sewage flowing throughout the city. Cause you can't.
Nope. Yeah. Voted down. Yeah. So, but back to Dersh for Rumble. Just a minute or two. Yeah. Yeah. Rumble is going to be.
Speaking of raw sewage, Rumble.
Yeah. Right. I also found, as long as we're dunking on Dersh, and I'm going to do that for the rest of his natural life, now that he's finally doing a thing that objectively I can say he's worse at than I am. So, you know, I'm never going to let him live that one down. He's also doing that thing that Alan Dershowitz does where he's lying about the law in such a way as to try and maintain plausible deniability. Mm. And this has to do with his latest client, Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy. Mr. MyPillow went on Fox News on Monday, last Monday, and said, I've got probably over 12 attorneys now. That sentence, I could just frame that sentence and live under it for a month. Anyway, I've got probably over 12 attorneys now, including Alan Dershowitz, Lindell said Monday. He came on board because he believes this is going to be the biggest First Amendment lawsuit in history. That was then picked up by CNBC, who called Alan Dershowitz, who said, and I quote, "My role is extremely limited," Dershowitz told CNBC on Tuesday in a phone call. Dershowitz maintained that he is, and this is the lie, quote, not representing either Lindell or MyPillow, and that he is only offering advice on the First Amendment issues surrounding the case. Let me explain this.
He wants to cash a check from an idiot who made $1 zillion on pillows and be as involved as little as he can because he knows this is a giant stupid thing. That's my guess.
That's really good. Yeah, exactly right. Look, you can be brought into a case for a limited purpose. And in fact, Dershowitz often is, right? Like it very would not limited make sense.
Check cashing purposes. That's all I'm here for.
but right, like
I have a certain set of skills. That set of skills is depositing things into my bank account. That's all I've hit. That's my expertise.
Oh, so good. It would not make sense to hire Dershowitz to, you know, defend you in a lawsuit, in a civil defamation lawsuit at trial, right? Because Dershowitz is just a guy, and he's an old guy and a professor. I think he's professor emeritus now, but in any event, right? Like, he's a law professor. He doesn't have a firm. He doesn't have associates. He doesn't have Morgan Stringer. He doesn't have, you know, paralegals, right? He's just a guy. So yes, it makes total sense, and you can be brought on for a limited engagement. I am here to do X, but not Y. I sometimes take cases like that. But you're still representing him. That is still your client, however little you would like it. Right. And in fact, if he's not your client, if neither Mike Lindell nor MyPillow are your client, if that statement were true, then every piece of advice that Alan Dershowitz offers on, quote, First Amendment issues, end quote, is now discoverable. Right? Would not be protected by attorney-client privilege. So, of course, he represents them, right? Of course, there is an executed retainer agreement by and between Mike Lindell or Mike Lindell and MyPillow Inc. or whatever the hell that name of that company is, and Alan Dershowitz. And Alan Dershowitz will defend himself by saying, well, I meant representing in the colloquial sense, not in the legal. He is deliberately trying to mislead because he wants to do what you said, right? Which is cash this right-wing grift check and not have the permanent stain on, you know, what is quickly becoming an embarrassing third act of his career.
Absolutely. My other question is, at what point can we demeritus him? Is that like tenure or something? Like, what can, because this is Harvard Law we're talking, right? He's still, can they get rid of him? Can we end this relationship? What would it
that
take?
That would be nice. Well, I have some ideas. I'll have to share them with you off the air.
Okay. So. Well, I mean, he's already got all the weird Epstein stuff and, I kept my shorts on while the child gave me a massage. Like, what does it take to get demeritus?
I will say, when we shared that Alan Dershowitz had a podcast, AG's retweet was, is it called Captain Underpants? Which I thought was genius. So I'm leaving all that in there because if I know my old professor at all, and I do, he's listening to this show.
Yeah, right.
So, absolutely. Not any of the other 474 episodes.
All right.
But if you don't think...
I just want to say, I take back everything I said, and I double down on it. I'm going to say it again even stronger. That's a fake out. I don't take back anything. Creep.
Excellent fake out. And as always, if as always you would like to sue us for defamation, Opening Arguments Media LLC is a Maryland limited liability company with its principal place of business in Towson, Maryland. Bring it on, prof.
And I think Dersh is a creep. If this is still in the show, that means my lawyer advises me it's okay to say he is a creep.
Absolutely. I'll advise you on the air. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Down. The law. Down. The law. Down. The law. Down. The law. All right. It's time for No Takesies Backsies Law. This was a huge one. I don't want to spoil it, but why don't you give us the breakdown involving almost $1 billion of no takesies backsies?
So you may have seen the headlines. You may have clicked through and read the first paragraph of the story. You probably didn't read all 13 paragraphs of the story, because, right, this is, which side are you on, Citibank or a dozen hedge funds?
Yeah,
right?
Like, yeah.
There are a lot of low cards in this hand, is what I'm saying here. But Citibank mistakenly wired $900 million. We're going to explain how that happened. And the question is there takesies-backsies law? It turns out this is a super fascinating question. There is a law of takesies-backsies. It's under the principle of mistake of fact and restitution. And generally, the law says if you get something that doesn't belong to you and the person making the oopsie, right, asks for it back, you've got to give it back. And in fact, that's the law in England. No exceptions, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, this was kind of the spirit of the show early on, of opening arguments early on, was like, look, there's no magical, you know, yeah, okay, the bank accidentally gives you $10 million. You know, it might be clickbait to be like, yeah, you get to keep that. But no, in reality, the law isn't magical. It's what you would think. It's, you know, if someone makes a mistake and gives you $10 million in your bank account, you don't get to just have it. That's not how things usually work, except... maybe in this circumstance.
In the United States, we have an exception to the general takesies-backsies rule, and it is called discharge for value. It was first articulated in the 1937 first restatement of restitution. And again, because this is 1937 and it's a legal treatise, apologies for the language, but you know, it says, a creditor of another who has received from a third person any benefit in discharge of the debt or lien is under no duty to make restitution, therefore, although the discharge was given by mistake of the transferor, if the transferee made no misrepresentation and did not have notice of the transferor's mistake.
Oh, thank God. I thought, so you just meant like dense old timey language. I thought we were just going to be like racial epithets or yeah, something. Right. Whatever you said, it's in 1937, so apologies for the language. I'm like, okay, here it goes. Be like, yeah. A white man being the only one who can have or something. You know, you never
yeah,
know.
Yeah. Yeah. This is just a lot of kind of unhelpful legal jargon, but here's the way to understand it, right? Thomas, you borrow $100 from me. And then you intending to mail $100 to your cousin for her birthday, accidentally mail it to me instead. And then you call me up and say, oh, hey, man, like that $100, sorry, I meant to send that to my cousin, not to you. And then I say, yeah, right. But no takesies backsies. And I win. Right.
Wow.
And I get to keep the $100. And the reason why are bank worms.
Bank worms?
Bank worms. So bonitis? Put a pin in bank worms, because here is where we enter Citibank. Actually, we start off with a struggling makeup company called Revlon. I get the sense that they have not been particularly popular for the past 20 or 30 years. They were everywhere when I was growing up.
I was going to say, I thought Revlon, I would have told you that's still, I just remember the commercials and not a thing anymore. They're not.
They're still a thing, but in 2016, Revlon borrowed $1.8 billion on a 7-year loan that was due in 2023. And when you borrow almost $2 billion, you can't really like just go to a bank and say, how about $2 billion? So what Citibank did was they got together a dozen different hedge funds, right? And Revlon put up a bunch of different offices and other things as collateral for that $1.8 billion. Now, fast forward 4 years, we're in May of 2020, and Revlon needs to borrow even more money.
Jeez.
Its liquid position is not good, is how it's described in the case, right? So it entered into a whole bunch more transactions. And without getting into more incredibly dense legal language, basically what happened was Revlon got some of the collateral moved out from the 2016 loan so that it could secure a new round of loans.
Hmm.
Now, if you're one of those 2016 lenders, right? And now think about it. If you're one of those 2016 lenders, you're kind of stuck because on the one hand, you don't want to lose collateral that is securing your loan.
But on the other hand, you don't want them to go out of business and not be able to pay you back.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. So the lenders agreed to restructure the transaction in return for what are called roll-up rights. And a roll-up transaction is where you as a lender exchange one loan for another, dollar for dollar. So as part of the roll-up transaction, the borrower pays the interest that was accrued as of the date of the roll-up, but they're not paying down any of the principal, right? Instead, principal on the existing loan is exchanged for the principal on a new loan, right? So it gives them the right to say, okay, we are exchanging this loan to diversify our portfolio, and we're going to take a different kind of indebtedness and hopefully spread the risk of loss around.
Hey, folks, just popping in here to remind you to join us for a bonus Q&A each and every week, Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time, and that's on the Stereo app. The Stereo app is super cool. You can grab it on your phone, whatever phone, just go to your app store, download that Stereo app spelled normal, S-T-E-R-E-O. Stereo is a live social conversation app where you can be essentially the co-host of the show. You get to be part of the conversation, or if you don't want to, you can just listen in. But what is so cool about it is you get to be a part of the show if you want. You submit questions and we get to hear your voice. We get to hear you asking those questions. It's a ton of fun. There have been some really great topics. It's also a chance for you to share a little bit about yourself or where you're coming from or whatever it might be. It's been so fun to get to know more listeners via that Stereo app. So reminder, grab the app on your phone. Follow @Torres or @SiriusPod. And that's how you'll know when we go live. And join us each and every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. We can't wait to hear you be a part of that show. So come hang out, the Stereo app, each and every Wednesday.
So now, that's where we are in 2020. And now we have a piece of software called FlexCube.
FlexCube.
FlexCube is the software that is used by Citibank's ABTF team. ABTF is asset-based transitional finance, right? So Citibank has this team. It's not a taint team. It's an ABTF team. They process and service asset-based loans. And they use this piece of software called FlexCube. And here, I'm going to quote directly from the court's opinion because it seems to me that I do not want to be accused of making defamatory remarks about FlexCube. So the court says, on FlexCube, the easiest, or perhaps only, way to execute the roll-up transactions was to pay the lenders their share of the principal and the interest owed as of the date of the transaction, then to reconstitute the loan with the remaining lenders, was then to enter it into the system as if paying off the loan in its entirety, thereby triggering accrued interest payments to all the lenders, but then direct the principal portion of the payment to what was called a wash account. That is, an internal Citibank account that shows journal entries used for certain FlexCube transactions to account for internal cashless fund entries and ensure that the money does not leave the bank.
I did not follow all that.
yeah. Let me try and break that down. Right. So the idea is, for these roll-up transactions where you're exchanging one loan for another, the software that they use to do that, called FlexCube, doesn't have a roll-up button, right? Hmm. Instead, the way you process it is, it looks like you're paying off the whole loan. But instead of paying off the whole loan, right, which would be where you would pay not only the interest due as of the time of the transaction, but all the outstanding principal.
Sure.
All of the principal is then paid by Citibank into a wash account. It all comes out in the wash, right? Okay. And so the idea is, it looks to FlexCube like you're paying off both principal and interest, but the interest goes out to the lenders and the principal just goes into a circle, goes into another Citibank account.
Is this just their internal like accounting software? I'm trying to figure out what this even is.
It's yeah, this is their processing loan their payments. Product processing program that the bank uses for initiating and executing wire payments.
Okay.
Right. This is how they make payments to the outside world. And as you might suspect, Citibank doesn't do this themselves. They've offshored it to a group called Wipro Limited, which is an Indian company that runs FlexCube, right? So this is truly the, you know, office space. What is it you say you do around here, right? Like, no, I don't actually push the numbers into FlexCube. I call India and tell India to put the numbers into FlexCube. So two Wipro employees, Aroki Araj and Santhosh Kupusami Ravi, went to process this roll-up transaction in FlexCube, right? And they processed it according to the instructions, right? Principal goes to Wash, interest goes to the lenders. If you're wondering what that division is, the interest payments to go out to the lenders were $7.8 million. The principal going to the Wash was $894 million. You know what happened next, right? Raj proceeded with the final steps to approve the transfers, which popped up a stop sign, right? What they actually call in the case, a stop sign on the screen, which is a little warning that says account used is wire account and funds will be sent out of the bank. Do you want to continue Y/N? Yep. But the stop sign didn't indicate the amount that was going to be sent out of the bank. It just said, yeah, some funds are going to be paid, right? And he was like, well, yeah, you know, the $7.8 million is going to be paid. Yeah. And so he hit Y. And yes, FlexCube paid all of the lenders, both the principal and the interest.
Yikes.
Yeah, that was on August the 11th. Citibank noticed this on August the 12th.
God.
And they sent a bunch of recall notices, right? And interestingly enough, some of the lenders gave the money back.
Right.
About $400 million worth, actually. But some of them kept it. And then Citibank sued them for conversion. And conversion, despite being another old-timey word, is actually a thing that I have sued people for. It is the civil tort that says, you have our stuff and we want you to give it back. So in this case, yeah, I mistakenly directed $900 million. You have that. I want you to give it back. And here's where we get worms.
I got worms. That's what we're going to call it.
Yeah. So this is a case called Bank Worms.
Bank Worms.
It was
Sand Worms. Credit agreement. You hate them, right?
Yeah.
I hate them myself.
Between every party in this case is delightfully named. Between Spedley Securities Limited, an Australian company, and Bank Worms, a French bank. And so it's probably like Banque Worms, but I will call this case the Bank Worms case until the day I die.
Do the French who made that name think that means something better in English than what it means, is what I'm asking.
I don't know. I will ask. My son is nearly fluent in French, so I will ask him if...
I've been watching, we've been watching a number of foreign shows on HBO, coincidentally, lately, and with subtitles, and it is curious to hear. You can pick out English phrases from time to time that I guess are just idioms that they say but are in English, you know? And it is really fascinating to see, like, oh, yeah, they just say this thing in English, and that, it's like when we say, like, deja vu, you know? It's, they have things like that, but for English, so maybe that... I don't know. Bankworms? Is that something they think mean something?
I don't think so. So French bank, Bankworms. And Spedley Securities had this revolving credit agreement, and they paid it off every 90 days. And that's a very typical arrangement, right? You know, it's just like a business credit card, right? You have a revolving line of credit. Mm-hmm. March 1989, Bankworms told Spedley that it would not renew the agreement again, right? Your credit has fallen. We're no longer interested. We're demanding payment of our outstanding debt. As of April 10th, 1989, the due date on the credit, right? So the next month in April. Then on April 10th, 1989, Spedley called up its bank, Security Pacific International Bank, and said, I want you to wire the balance, which is almost $2 million, to Bankworms. And that was at 12:36 in the morning, right? So literally, you know, 36 minutes after midnight. Then 3 hours later, Spedley said, yeah, you know what? Never mind on that. They sent, and this is 1989, so it's a telex. Right?
I don't know what that is. Is it a fax? What's a telex? Like an old-timey text message?
Yeah, a telex is a custom name of a product, right? If you Google this, you will see the like delightfully old-timey like kind of typewriter, but basically it was a form, it was over the telegraph wires.
Wow.
And it was a way and of having international communications before the era of fax machines.
Now, this is so funny because there's the Radiohead song Planet Telex, and I've never even thought about it. It's just one of those things. I was like, oh, whatever that is. I didn't think about it.
Yeah, it's and nearby now, Planet Kolob.
It up, and he was going to name it Planet Xerox, but Xerox is like a copyrighted thing, yeah. And so they had to go with Telex. What? It's so random. Okay.
Well, there you go. So sent a Telex. So, and I mean, literally, like, a Telex causes the other side's telex machine to like type the keys out. So it starts clacking away.
It is an old timey text message.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. That says stop payment to bank worms. Instead, make payment in the same amount to National Westminster Bank USA, different creditor. Notwithstanding getting both of these, the bank sent the almost $2 million to Bank America, which was the agent for the account of bank worms. And then 2 hours later, Security Pacific, Spedley's broker, told Bank America, oh, look, that was a mistake. Give us the money back. And expecting that they would, they then sent out the $2 million to National Westminster Bank USA. And so then we wound up in court to figure out who gets the money. Does Security Pacific get that $2 million or was bank worms allowed to keep it? There were a trio of cases that went to the Second Circuit and also the New York State Supreme Court, called the New York Court of Appeals. And the New York Court of Appeals, under New York law, said when a beneficiary receives money to which it is entitled and has no knowledge that the money was erroneously wired, the beneficiary should not have to wonder whether it may retain the funds. Rather, such a beneficiary should be able to consider the transfer of funds as a final and complete transaction, not subject to revocation.
But what I'm wondering there is the part where you throw in and they don't know that it's, you know, under false pretenses or whatever you said. What's the timing on that? Like, if I, you know, it would be weird to assume that you'd have to know it was wrong ahead of time in order for that little caveat to apply. You know, is there a time limit where it's like, 5 minutes is fine, an hour is not? I don't know.
So you have cut to one of the two major questions that were at issue in this case and will be at issue on appeal. So let me dispense with the other one first. And the other one is, must that debt be due at the time that you receive it? Because think about it, all the analogous cases and the bank worms case and the little $100 that, you know, that I made up, all of that, you would say, I'm expecting to get my $100. I'm expecting to get my $2 million. And then all of a sudden it comes in and you're like, oh, look, there's my $2 million. It was then due and owing. In the case of this Revlon loan that Citibank sent out, it wasn't due until 2023. Now, can you prepay loans? Absolutely, you can prepay loans. And this loan specifically had a prepayment clause, right?
Yeah.
So that was their argument in the first half of the case was essentially Citibank arguing, look, for this exception to apply, the amount has to be due and owing, right? Otherwise, it's not a discharge for value because they know they're not expecting to get the money right now. And the court said, nope, when we look at bankworms, we don't see any requirement that it be presently due. And in fact, like in revolving lines of credit cases, you know, they weren't expecting it for another month or another 3 months or whatever, right? So nope, doesn't have to be presently due, just has to be due at some point. You're indebted to a person, and if you wire them a sum equal to or less than that indebtedness, they can keep it. And then Citibank raised the same argument you raised, which was, well, there's got to be a time, a notice period. There has to be a time in between. Yeah. We've sent this out and then we figured out that we've made a mistake.
Because otherwise it seems like that provision is useless, because the only way it would apply is if you, like, while you were sending it, were like, this isn't real, and sent it. You know, it seems like otherwise that would be the only application of it.
Yeah, that's right. And the Citibank court said, you are on notice when you get the money. That concludes the transaction, even though the wiring is instantaneous. The transaction is transferred over into your account the second that it's done, so long as you meet the rest of the criteria, then there's no takesies backsies.
So are you saying Citibank is arguing that, or this is what the court said? I couldn't tell what.
Yeah, no, the court said there is no notice period.
So they essentially read that part out of the ruling.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you think about it, right, like that is the equivalent of saying, right, like, oh, you can take back, like, while it's in, if I've mailed you a check, I can call you and okay, take it back yeah, while it's in the mail.
That's
right?
Fair. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
But if I've wired you the money, then.
Unless you can call faster than the speed of wire.
Well,
which I doubt you can. Maybe you could. What if the amount is still like in settlement or something, or whatever it is, you know, where it's like kind of show, it's still pending, shows it's pending in your bank account. Maybe then.
Yeah. It would be very interesting. The court considered and paused on the argument, but essentially where it ruled on the equities was, look, we get that these are the court described it as two basic intuitive principles. Here, I'll read a little bit from the decision. On the one hand, if a party sends money to another by mistake, the latter should generally be required to give it back. On the other hand, if one party owes money to another and pays that money back, the latter should generally be allowed to keep and use the money as it wishes, without fear that the former will develop a case of borrower's remorse and claim that the payment was made by mistake. How to reconcile these principles would be hard enough in the abstract. It is even harder in an age where money can be transmitted from one party to another instantaneously, and investors can and often do redeploy available funds almost as quickly. Were this court writing on a blank slate, it is far from clear that it would reconcile those principles in a way that allowed the lenders to keep the money that Citibank indisputably transferred by mistake. After all, Citibank realized its error and notified the lenders within one day, and there is no evidence or suggestion that in the intervening hours, the non-returning lenders, that's what it calls the people who kept the money, relied to their detriment on the belief that the transfers were unintentional.
That was going to be my question. There doesn't seem to be any discussion of like, well, did you spend the money? Like, it might be one thing if they're like, sorry, we blew it on blackjack. What is it? Hookers and flapjacks.
Flapjacks, yeah.
Or whatever. Like your famous quote, hookers and flapjacks. Anyway, it wasn't like there was no discussion of that. And that would be interesting if it was like, well, you know, if you can show that you in good faith used that money believing that it was due to you and that was all legitimate, then sure. But apart from that, you should probably just return the money. Sounds like there's not really any discussion of that, though.
Yeah. And the reason is because of the bankworms decision.
Bankworms.
Because the bankworms said that you did not have to prove detrimental reliance in order to keep the money. You just had to resolve the question with finality. In light of the bankworms opinions, the relevant time for evaluating whether a lender was on notice of a mistaken payment is clear. It is when the payment is received.
Wow.
These decisions compel the court to conclude that the non-returning lenders are entitled to keep the money.
Yikes.
Now, this is not over. It has now been fully briefed. It's on appeal to the Second Circuit. And Citibank has petitioned for an injunction preventing the lenders from spending the money while the case is on appeal to the Second Circuit. And I wanted to make sure we covered this now, that it was finally briefed as of last Friday. We should get a decision in the next couple of days. But I think Citibank is going to lose that motion.
Wow.
And if you're thinking about it, right, you're like, okay, well, maybe a good way to sort of split the baby is to say, all right, like we're following this Bankworms case. The equities kind of seem to go the other way. But, you know, we're sort of bound by existing precedent. Let's see what happens on appeal. But let's, you know, let's not let these hedge funds get too crazy with the $500 million. But again, remember the standard for injunctive relief. The standard for injunctive relief is that you have to show not only leave aside the likelihood of success on the merits, right? You know, they're probably not in this case, right? Bankworm seems pretty dispositive. But here, the real difficult question is, what's the actual irreparable harm? And saying, well, hedge funds might lose my money, that's typically not enough. Courts would look at it and be like, yeah, these hedge funds have a ton of money. Like, you're going to be fine. This is money judgment. That's the definition of an injury that is reparable. And so, no. So wow. We're not going to require the funds to be segregated. I'm very interested in where the judge comes out.
Boy, I bet those hedge funds that returned that $400 million feel like real saps right now.
They chumps.
Feel, yeah. Yeah. What are we thinking? Because it is kind of a collective action-y thing in this case where, well, okay, so this is Citibank. Was this still related to Revlon?
Yeah, because Citibank is administering the Revlon loans.
Yeah, right? Yeah, gotcha. So yeah. For Revlon, it's like, well, it's kind of all or nothing. Like you would, or if you're a creditor, like you said earlier on, you might be fine to continue lending to them, but only if everybody else was too. If half the people take their money back, you got to imagine the other half is like of creditors is like, oh my gosh, well now this might not get paid back if Revlon goes out of business. So that's got to be a tough scenario there.
Yeah, I mean, who know how the remaining principal balance will be allocated on the Revlon loan. That is above my pay grade.
Right? Yeah.
Like I can do the law stuff, but the accounting on that seems like you need to get somebody who's pretty damn good to figure that out. So there you go. Crazy case, some worms, no clear, a telex machine,
Good times.
Whose side are you on? Are you on Citibank's or are you on, you know, these poor hedge funds that got $500 million in windfall?
I'm on the side of, as kind of you said in the decision, I don't care about either side of this, I guess, for the, you know, people wise, like I don't care about that, but for the legal principle, it feels like this is something that if you were coming at it fresh without any weird Bankworms law, you would come up with something different than this. This doesn't feel right to me.
I think you would. I will tell you the argument that was made by the lenders and repeated by Judge Furman, who, you know, very well respected. This is Jesse Furman. We've talked about him before. Very well respected district court judge was, you know, Bankworms has been the law for just about 30 years now. It doesn't seem to have deterred banks from wiring large chunks of money, right? And so from a social engineering perspective, saying, yeah, it's extra incumbent that like Citibank inspect its $1 billion wires and give them an extra once over. Like, what's the harm in that? That doesn't seem like that's crippled international finance. And that's a pretty
decent
argument.
Dot your T's and cross your I's before you.
Yeah. mind your I's and Q's. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there you go. That is the story of how Citibank came to erroneously wire almost $1 billion, and the folks who kept it, and it looks like are going to continue to be able to keep it.
All right. Well, that was a classic deep dive, Andrew. That's the Tuesday dive. You learn so much each and every time listening to those dives. I love it. Takesies backsies law. This podcast is brought to you by the X Chair. I love my new X chair. I am sitting in it right now, and you folks probably know I spend a lot of time sitting in a chair, whether it's recording away, streaming, editing, and I have never had an office chair that looks and feels so amazing in my entire life. It's so comfortable, I can sit for hours, and I have to, and never feel uncomfortable. The secret is not only their patented dynamic variable lumbar DVL support, which offers unbelievable lumbar support to my lower back, but now, thanks to their new XHMT technology, I can also get heat and massage therapy while I'm sitting in my desk. If you're someone like me who has to spend a lot of time sitting down in your office chair, you might want to try this XHMT stuff. It delivers heat and massage technology right to your core. It increases blood flow, muscle recovery, and energy. These are all perks that make working from home or the office a joy. It even has 4 different massage modes and a fast warming heat technology for when I'm sore. You won't believe the X chair difference until you feel it for yourself. So the X chair is on sale now for $100 off. Go to xchairoa.com now. That's the letter X, chair, and the letters O and A.com. Or call 1-844-4X-CHAIR. X-Chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort, and you can finance your purchase for as little as $30 a month. Go to xchairoa.com now and use code XWheels for free X-Wheel blade casters. That's xchairoa.com. Go there now.
And thank you!
And now it's time to thank our Hall of Famers, our all-time greats on patreon.com/law, enjoying that lot-awful movies. Hopefully you're listening to it for a second or third time. Cop Rock with Eli Busnick. Your turn to thank them first, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you to Tel Morgan, Gatomson. I hope I'm doing that correctly. Amy Hensley, January 20th, baby. Contact your doctor for an insurrection lasting more than 4 hours. To Lauren, Zach Bloom, Andrew, why must the wheels of justice turn slowly? I want justice now. To non-binary, omnisexual, satanic socialist in Republican clothing. Oh, well, that sounds amazing. To Legal Eagle is so handsome. Yes, he is. Why would Durst choose to be a freaking joke and abandon credibility? Well, hopefully you enjoyed this episode. California employment work accident or litigation questions, call or text attorney David Nitka, 310-776-5879. Again, that's 310-776-5879, attorney David Nitka. The Smiths, carve Outcast on Stone Mountain now. Is that a thing? I don't know
anyway. What that is.
Yeah. That's the 90s band Outcast.
Sure.
Great. Richard Scott, Jacob Daniel Murphy, Ted Cruz's Seasonal Migrant Caravan, Adam Barishoff. Banking law is exciting. No, really. I swear. Want to hear about the new comptroller? You mean to tell me that the guy with multiple credible allegations of misconduct may not have been properly vetted before being, and then I think confirmed to the Supreme Court is what this is meant to say. The Texas outages were caused by gerrymandering. Rest in peace, Brandon Bernard. We must abolish the death penalty. Sparkle Donkey is really good tequila is admissible because it counts as an excited utterance.
Nice.
The Coterie, business success with Salesforce. Find us at www.thecoterie.io. Justice for Beer, budget botanist on Fiverr, unporking advice for your house plants. Listening for years, still can't come up with something clever. Well, you try. Level Up Canine. I love the name of this. Take your dog to the next level. That's Memphis Area Dog Trainers. Becoming a patron to get 5 episodes a week, and I finally caught up on months of backlog. New book, The Greatest Gift of All, A Logical Path from Religion to Humanism by Mark McLean. Avril Parks, I'm Learning. I like my pork streaks paired with at Casa Agria and at Emperor's Brewery Beer. Josh Hawley's dorm room poster, Regression to the Meme. My wife got a COVID vaccine, and all I got was the chance to wait until my turn. GD Tree says, so you're telling me that the parliamentarian is an expert in bird, bird, bird. The bird is the word.
bird.
the trash men, right?
Bird. Yep. That Family Guy episode is so funny.
Thomas Kleberg, Buddy Guyerson is doing a 24-hour birthday stream March 23rd at TTV/Stubsington. Is this how I changed my Patreon name? Yes, it is. Idea for a screenplay, Air Bud, Man's Best Amicus. Hard on. Well, there you go. The more law I learn, the less faith in humanity I have. Well, you know, today, Alabama's trans kids can still safely talk to the Trevor Project at 1-866-488-7386. The Trans Lifeline is 1-877-565-8860. Again, if you need that, and go back, replay, write those numbers down, let us know. Trevor Project and Trans Lifeline. All right. Thanks to two fabulous lesbians who were too busy playing with the fabulous puppy to change our names the last few weeks. Love myself a fabulous puppy. Edgy Veggie, One Smart Cookie Scent Cutters. Bob Newhouse, Sassy Italy Tourist thinks OA must record a show from the balcony overlooking our favorite Piedmont vineyard when this is all over. Les deux lesbiens, fabuleux. Jennifer Chakowski, a republic if you can keep it. Oh my God, there is absolutely no way I'm reading this Patreon name. No, just no. A string of unconstitutional laws. Mike Hall, Greg Kreimer. Maybe if we just call that place Dakota Territory again, they will stop sending people to D.C. Say it with me, Amicus. Nuzzly, fuzzly, Torsten Peel of the Satanic Temple. Yes. I'm not even a tortfeasor and I'm kicking your ass. Don't trust trees with big limbs. They're very shady. Oh, God, dad jokes will always go over well here. Angry Macface. Sorry, Andrew. Uncle Frank is too far gone. Penelope is ranting about Terpsichore's cryptography. The Books That Burn podcast, reviewing fictional depictions of trauma since 2019. TIL. If a horse isn't from the Champagne region of France, it has to be called a sparkling donkey. Frau Blücher. I porked a streaker. Totally feasted his tort. He's buying me dinner on Saturday. Oh, good for you. Another Minneapolisite excited at the prospect of a Chicago live show. Yeah, preferably in the summer. Murray Gregerson, travel to Switzerland. The scenery is great. They have good chocolate, and also the flag is a big plus. Okay. Change my Patreon name so I don't jump every time you read it.
Stupid.
I love it so much. Simple Country Hyper Chicken. This week's T3BE question brought to you by Porked Exams LLC, Maryland limited liability company wholly owned by P.A. Torres. Crazy Corgi. I move for a good podcast thingy. Well, I second. I paid good money for this Patreon name to be read, and I'm going to get my money's worth, even if it gets cut off in the mid. After a year and a half, I can finally tell who's who on Citation Needed by Voice. Eli was the most obvious. Just saying. Yeah, they've not had you or I on. Have you been on Citation Needed? Yeah.
They got enough white dudes on that show, I think.
Well, fair enough. 6-3 Supreme Court decisions aren't cool. What's cool are 6-9 decisions. Nice. Trump made me completely reevaluate Bush 43. Now I'm worried what future nightmare could possibly make me reevaluate Trump. Seattle Pete, Brent Medling, Jake, I became a patron because this is the best podcast ever. Ha ha ha. Seymour Butts, I get it now. Is tort short for tortellini? Question mark. Christopher Brown, stop. Ask a question the cat lawyer would ask. And Lawful Copter says, Andrew and Thomas, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for everything you guys do. That tears me up every time. All right, Thomas, take it away.
All right. A fabulous single lesbian, GF position open. Please love me. Wow. You didn't give any contact info, though. So we'd help you out if we could. Dangerous but domesticated property patrol chicken. A man was sued after his snapping turtle attacked someone. They sued for tortoise interference. Something, something, Andrew Seidel's butt. Odin the Law Dog, Zirkle, Robert M. I want Lotto Bots, Inform and Roll Out merch. I forgot to mention, we're doing a live show in Rochester, New York, out of our own free will. Of our own free will. Aspen live show. Oof, lots of live shows coming in the future, hopefully. Check out Ring Runner and Brigador on Steam, two slightly mad indie labors of love that do not deserve their obscurity. Polly Hernandez, Derek Savage here. Me and Cool Cat love y'all, but seriously, stop looking for us. Just enjoy the books. Hey, everybody, we're all going to get laid. Emily Rainbow Spence, Ian Hamilton, Jason Kopus. Hotspear suggests Biden pardon a nonviolent drug offender every day until Republicans agree to limit president's pardoning power. Earth Court 4, copy wrong. Robert Coburn, requesting and looking forward to EFF-related deep dives. Woo, tech law. Nate Drex, Darth Mandy Pants, givetomodestneeds.org, givetomodestneeds.org. Not that, Chris Wallace. Alexa, how do you fix a hole in the wall? Happy to breathe again. My gills were turning blue. Thanks, Thomas. 13th century Saxony gravel truck lawyer. I am the bad things that happen in Philadelphia. Stay gritty. Diogenes the Cynic was right. Jeff Gelbach, Jennifer Kratch. The bird rule may be a law, but the bird, but the bard law rules. Don't take legal advice from a cannibal. CivilPoliticsRadio.com, Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Valley Free Radio. John Bilderback, dude, ever so slightly hopeful that we can have nice things again. Stephen Balticate Sandoval, if ignorance is bliss, why do all the dumb right-wing lunatics always seem so unhappy? Philip Kaiser, Andrea the Arbitrary and Capricious, you tell me the definition of a sandwich and I'll tell you if a Crunchwrap. No matter how much you love Transformers, never experiment with Autobotic asphyxiation. Absion, Alfred Wallace, Payne's Trumpet, never underestimate the perversity of machinery or the machinery of perversity. Laughing at Thomas, laughing at Andrew, swearing at Andrew's dial-up modem. That was a great moment. Jonathan, Trump wanted four seasons, got Doubletree. In the karaoke system, the people are represented by two parties, the songs and the karaoke legends who sing them. Dun-dum. In France, a tortfeasor is called a... nothing. I got nothing. There's some symbols I can't read. Milo Meatsong Esquire formally moves for lifelines to be added to T3BE. Oh, I get 100%, I bet. Join your labor union. Together we bargain. Alone we beg. Can't wait for my Fauci ouchie. Nice. Is a reptile dysfunction having too many reptiles or too few? Asking for a friend. I'm like a pretzel, half-baked, individually twisted, with naturally salty flavor. False. Whoa. But that came in the import, like, oh, okay. I don't know what they did, this patron, but it's not just the word false. Like, it looks, maybe they did a bunch of spaces. I don't know what they did, but it makes it look like an import error. Anyway. Professionally irresponsible and borderline sanctionable title of Andrew's sex tape. I think I read that wrong, but still. Anonymous, wordorigins.org, your source for legal terms from 13th century Saxony. My witty names aren't original. My original names aren't witty. RIP, notorious RBG. Therese Chan really misses traveling. Ba, weep, grana, weep, nini, bong. Wear a mask, wash your hands, watch your distance. Welcome the vaccine. They said I could be anything, so I became two fabulous lesbians. Derek, big easy blasphemy. It's kind of nice having a competent federal government again. SummitShuffleboard.com. A string of unpronounceable characters. RondaTheDork.com. Andrew is my favorite Thomas co-host. Aaron is close second. Malika Chandler. Tricicular manslaughter. Soggy Pants. Buttercup's Fitness Service. Actual fitness advice from an actual cat. Adam Costa. Jay Aldenwalt. Matthew Vernon. Sakashite Fukasumi. 3 years for assaulting a woman or 10 years for defacing a statue makes total sense in Tory Britain. Wow. Adopt a homeless pet and oppose declawing and ear docking. De jure belli et pacis at last, baby. Andrew Seidel's butt is the best lawyer butt. Legal Eagle is a close second. Heather L. Jeremiah's Fancy Microwave Emporium. Ian and Allie. Danny Rosari. Eli Bosnick. David in Brooklyn. Why are we not talking about inverted centaurs? Sam Danow. Yeah, like Bojack. Sam Danow. Mitchell. No commute, so behind on podcasts. Fun fact, there is a world's most dangerous cheese. I agree with that 100%. Natasha Crunchwrap wants you to support the Justice Policy Institute, Sam Buck, and Conrad Michaels. Thank you, Hall of Famers.
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
No kidding.
And now it's time for T3BE. Oh my God, I've been thinking about this one. What happened here? Let's see what happened here. Test porkage. Let's go.
All right. So, Thomas, this was a con law question about whether the Supreme Court has jurisdiction to review the merits of a state court decision that was predicated upon the due process clause of the 14th Amendment, but in which the state Supreme Court also said in several of our earlier decisions, we could have found you liable under state law, but that issue was not presented in this case, so we don't rule under the state constitution. There were four answers. You immediately eliminated B and C, which I will tell you are good eliminations. B was, yes, because the federal and state law issues in this case are so intertwined that a resolution of the federal law issues is necessary to facilitate a proper determination of the state law issues. That's a potential ground for when the Supreme Court can review the decisions of a state Supreme Court. So it states an operative legal principle, but like that doesn't match up with the facts, mm-hmm. right? Like the facts stipulate otherwise. So B, good elimination. C, no, because the decision of the highest state court renders the case moot. You were like, that seems to make no sense, and that makes no sense.
Okay, good.
Right? Like that would say you can't appeal things. Like, yep. That's a nonsense answer. So you were torn, and you were torn for a long time between A and D. You said, if the test is not porked, then A is the correct answer, yes, because the highest state court based its decision wholly on federal law grounds. And then you're like, but I think I'm being screwed. I think the answer is D, no, because the independent state law grounds could have been used to justify the result in this case. Well, Thomas, it's a mixed bag. I'm here to tell you the test is not pork.
No!
But you've gotten it wrong. Yeah, no, it's this straightforward A.
Okay.
And here's why.
I went out on a limb. I thought the porkage was so extreme that it would be D. But okay. All right.
The standard that this was testing for when the U.S. Supreme Court can review or can't review a state Supreme Court opinion is whether that state Supreme Court opinion rests on adequate and independent state law grounds.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's those two are both independent tests, right? So adequate, the state law must explain all of the result, and independent, it must be clearly state law and not anything else.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yep. Yeah, it was A. I had it. I just thought
you
this
had
test
it.
Is so poor.
I typed up the winning answer and calculated your winning percentage. And then you were like,
well, then let's
but you know what? I'm going in for D.
Yeah. No, you typed it. No takesies, backsies. We just did a whole deep dive on that. You already wired the correct answer over to me, so...
I was
really back and forth. I think the part where it's like, does the court have jurisdiction? It'd be tough to say it doesn't have the ability to do that. And that's what I started to say before I switched up. It's just hard because this test has been so porked that I'm always looking for a way that it's fooling me. There's a big difference in test taking when you think like every question is a trick question versus the first 200 questions I did where, you know, some of them were and some of them weren't. But I just, yeah, this is, I'm really, really wrapped around the axle or whatever you say on this. Cause I had A, but I just thought like it's every question has been tricking me every time. So there must be some weird thing that'll make D the right answer. Like, oh no, it could have been. So there you go. But no, I got it wrong.
Yeah. And as I have said before, the real bar screws with you like that. It really does. I'm sorry that you're experiencing it. I will tell you, you have joined some pretty good company of a lot of us who also experienced that.
Well, it's the worst when you do it on something like this, because it's like everybody's like, yeah, obviously A. It's like, yeah, I know. I know. I knew it was obviously A. But every time, like we've had 10 questions where it's been obviously A. And then you're like, yeah, but there's a really weird law that means it's not A, you know? So
yeah,
it's tough.
No, it's tough.
There you have it. Well, I got my streak porked at one. One in a row is all I can muster. We're back to losing.
Wrong.
Everybody cries. Everybody hurts.
But I'm sure a very fine listener got this one right. So why don't you tell us who this week's big winner is?
Well, Thomas, this week's winner is Andrew Ray on Twitter, who writes, A, trying to double bluff the examiners is a losing test strategy. The obvious answer is the right one in this case. So good piece of advice. Short, succinct, to the point. Lots of people got A, but I thought that was some helpful advice. Everyone give Andrew Ray a follow on Twitter. That is at Dioptre, D-I-O-P-T-R-E. And everyone congratulate him on being this week's winner.
And that's our show. Reminder, get that Stereo app, download it on your phone, follow at Torres or at SiriusPod, and we will come at you every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern for a fun Q&A in which we get to hear your actual voices. It's so much fun. Get that app. Join us every Wednesday. And we will see you then, or for Rapid Response Friday, whichever comes first for you.
See ya. I move for a bad court thingy.
You mean a mistrial?
Yeah, that's why you're the judge and I'm the law talking guy.
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it will be a big help if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/yodelmountain and follow us on Twitter at openargs. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, all rights reserved. It is produced with the assistance of transcriptionist Heather Loveridge, production assistant Ashley Smith, and additional contributions from Morgan Stringer and Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our live shows and heads up the OA Wiki. Follow at OA Wiki on Twitter. Additional thanks to the moderators of the Opening Arguments Facebook community, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian Ziegenhagen, and Teresa. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith, who edits the show and created the fabulous theme music, which was used with permission.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.